Hi, everyone.
Hey, everybody.
How's Happy everybody New Year.
Happy New Year 2021. Hey.
So, yeah, actually, speaking of that, I wanted to talk about some, you know, kind of some things for the new year 2021, some ambitions and goals and whatnot. And one thing that I hope we can start doing is workshops, which we talked about at some point earlier. So everyone out there, soon-ish, at least, we will start doing like these workshops, maybe a 4-hour or 2-hour, something like that, where we focus on maybe like the gas and brake model or like befriending wakefulness or something like that.
Yeah.
And really maybe do like teaching and then Q&A, something like that.
Yeah, some of the natto ways, right? I mean, that's
the natto ways, exactly.
That's a great place to start.
Which, by the way, I was meaning to show you like my manuscript, which is done. I completed
all the right manuscript. That's great.
This is natto, so I'm just gonna have my wife read it through, do some editing, and I think in maybe just a month or something like that it'll be published. So I think it'll be really cool.
That's great. Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to announce too was I think I mentioned this to you, Michael, was that I hope to do more open classes with some of the folks that have been here as success stories. So it'd be like, you know, you or myself with someone who's gone through, taken the journey and is sleeping well and answering questions. Like, I think that would be really powerful.
Yeah, super helpful, because you can just hear it when they talk about their journey and where they were and where they got to. And it really relates to most people with insomnia, for sure.
Cool. So with that said, let's go over some questions. Let's share screen, Chrome tab, questions. And Matthew, if you're here, I'm going to go over your, because Matthew sent a pretty long email. I'm going to go over that in a separate video. But anyway, let's start here. Lynn asks, hi, where can I find the model that you refer to in Open Class 340? If you go to the description of any new video, just, you know, on YouTube, you go to the description. There is going to be playlists, multiple playlists in the description. And I think the last of those playlists is called the model. So you'll find it there. Okay, so let's read this message from Ingrid. Ingrid says, hi, Daniel. I've been watching your videos on CBTI and really appreciate the insights you provide, especially the posts on anxiety reduction and doing less to sleep more. I'm much less anxious about sleeping at night and waking up randomly. I'm able to fall asleep quickly and go back to sleep quickly because of those CBT techniques. However, I still feel ragged during the day. I've been doing sleep restriction for a couple of weeks now, going to bed around 12:30, 12:15, waking 6:45. I slept very well the first week with high sleep efficiency, but I felt like I couldn't stay awake during the day. Regardless if I napped during the day, I still slept well, but I couldn't stay awake. So I thought I'd ease up my sleep window by 15 minutes, and that just made my sleep quality worse. Vivid dreams, waking more, and still tired during the day. Then I tried the last 3 days to just sleep when I was sleepy, and that resulted in either A, waking up too early, B, waking up too late. This is weird. My question for you, you said in one video that if you have high sleep efficiency but don't feel rested and sleepy during the day, you should restrict the time in bed even more. Am I training myself to sleep less? How will getting less sleep equal feeling more rested? It just seems like a big dichotomy to me that sleeping well and sleeping less will improve my daytime sleepiness. Or could I have something else going on? Thank you so much for your help and all the resources you make available. Very good questions here from Ingrid. And I can tell that Ingrid has probably tuned into older videos where, you know, my philosophy was very, very different from what it is now. So let's go over this. So firstly, what Ingrid describes here is like the traditional CBTI method of like, okay, I'm giving myself a kind of tight sleep window. I'm calculating my sleep efficiency. If the sleep efficiency is good, then I can give myself 15 more minutes, which, you know, helps a lot of people, at least initially. But the problem with it becomes that I think you often get to a point where you feel like you have to control sleep and you have to do things to control your sleep. So even if you get to a place where you kind of sleep reasonably well, you always have that kind of underlying anxiety about it. Like, I have to kind of micromanage it and do this and tweak it and there and there. So I think a much better way, Ingrid, is, you know, what we're talking about nowadays in more recent videos, which is, you know, having a wake up time about the same time every morning, generally speaking, pretty good. But then instead of saying like, I'm going to stay up till this time, just give yourself what I now call a timeless sleep window, a timeless sleep window. So you say, I'm going to get up at, let's say, 7, but I'm going to stop checking the time at 10. And then I'm just going to do whatever I feel like doing. If I feel sleepy, I allow myself to sleep. If I don't, I enjoy that. So I think that is a much better way instead of doing this, like checking the time, checking this, checking that. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah. And, you know, just a quick comment on just CBTI in general, you know, it's kind of getting a little more mainstream. And I think it's when you first hear about it, you know, it's so easy just to focus on that sleep window. It becomes like the topic. It becomes like, well, you got to get this really dialed in before you can expect anything else to change. And it just lends itself really strongly to that anxiety associated with kind of like a boundary to your sleep. You know, it's kind of, it just makes people anxious because it's like, well, I don't know when I'm going to sleep and I don't know if I'm going to sleep, but now I have this window. And even though it's, you know, very strongly implied that you might not sleep every minute in that window, it's kind of, the person can kind of feel like they're supposed to, or it's just a hard, it's sometimes it's hard to communicate that. And, you know, it just creates anxiety in of itself a lot of times for a lot of people. And what you were talking about is exactly right. You call it the timeless window. I call it the fuzzy bedtime. You know, it's sort of like there's different terms for that beginning of the night idea. It's like you can't control sleep. That's just such a huge message. And this is yet another way or another place where it really becomes important to understand that. And so allowing yourself to get sleepy is the only way to do it.
You know, I wanted to, there was something I almost forgot. And it's kind of like, I'm so happy I remember it. I left people with a little quiz the other day, which was this one. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm sure you've heard this one, Michael, which is, mm-hmm. I feel I'm less anxious now about sleep. I'm less anxious, but I wonder why I'm not sleeping anymore. And, you know, the way I used to teach that was to say that, oh, that's great. I'm happier, less anxious, and like, just, you know, sleep will come with time. But if you think about the gas and brake model, for anyone that's new here, it's basically like sleep drive. Sleepiness is your gas and hyper arousal is the brake. If you think about that and you believe that's true, which I do, and then the hyper arousal has gone away or reduced, then you should sleep more or sleep better, right? So why is it that when somebody feels less anxious, they often initially at least like don't sleep anymore? And I think I finally understood that when I had a little insight and I understood why that was. And so for anyone that's been pondering this these few days and waiting in excitement for the big reveal, here it is.
Drum roll.
Here's the thing. The key to understanding this is hyperarousal does not only come from anxiety. Okay. So hyperarousal can be caused by curiosity, excitement, puzzlement, wondering, right? So when someone is like, I'm much less anxious, but why am I not sleeping more? Guess what? You're hyper aroused now too, but it comes from curiosity instead. You know, your anxiety is less, but now you're expecting to sleep. So that takes place and that creates this lag. So you're less anxious, but it takes a while before you sleep better because often the hyper arousal from anxiety is replaced by hyper arousal from excitement or curiosity. Yeah. Good, right?
Yeah, exactly right. That's so true.
I figure that one out.
A lot, and I'm guilty of this. A lot of times when I'm speaking about hyperarousal, I equate it with anxiety, you know, and that's a mistake on my part. I really shouldn't be doing that. But it's commonly, at least it starts with anxiety.
Yeah, that's
The whole start of the, you know, Oz Dominion, it's like you're perplexed. You're just, what the heck is going on? You have no idea what's going on. And it's like makes you anxious because it's that fear of the unknown, you know, that kind of idea. But once you start to understand it, the anxiety goes down or sometimes completely away, but you're still like kind of, you have a little bit of hyperarousal because for other kinds of reasons, like you were just describing. It's just good to be aware of that.
And I think there was something about that in Ingrid's message. So, So the other thing that Ingrid was talking a lot about was like daytime, like fatigue and sleepiness too, and not being able, like in those type of things. So I think to me, what I really have come to believe is really important is to understand where the fatigue comes from, and that you know, oftentimes it is not necessarily, we have a live comment from Neil. I'll get to that one in a second. It's not necessarily that it's just like you slept less and that's why you're more tired. It's not very rarely like that. It's typically more that you struggled more and therefore you are more tired. So when you had a night where you like, you were up a lot, you were trying this, you were trying that, you were thinking, you were pondering, you were experimenting, you were frustrated, then you feel tired. It's the struggle that causes the fatigue. And the sleepiness may come from a different place. Like, it may come from like you're simply less hyper-aroused one day and you feel more sleepy. But I think it's so important that the struggle is what causes a lot of that fatigue, the frustration, the hopelessness, all that stuff. And when you don't struggle anymore, you'll just feel better. I think that's important.
Right.
Let's see. Neil says, love the journey you made from the classic CBT to the NADO method, the idea that the set it part serves the forget it part. After generally you forget your insomnia, there is no reason to set times. The timeless night is so important. Yeah, absolutely, Neil. And by the way, Neil, I thought about you. I think you're live with us. Happy New Year, by the way. I thought about you, Neil, because I know you like that documentary about Michael Jordan and The Last Dance. Yeah. And I just started reading Phil Jackson's book called Sacred Hoops. Have you heard about that one, Michael?
I've not heard. I should check it out.
It's really good. And Neil, I think you would love it. It's basically, I didn't know this, but Phil Jackson is really into like Zen and mindfulness. And he really incorporated that in his coaching. And it's so interesting because you think sports is so much about winning or losing, right? But he says that if you're so focused on winning, if that's all you do it for, you build up all this pressure and tension. And even if you win, you won't feel good about it. So he says that that's not the thing. Like, you have to sort of play basketball for a higher purpose, you know, or without the intent of just winning and losing and stuff like that. It's a really amazing book.
Yeah, without the intent. Interesting phrase there, huh?
Yes. No, it's all the same. It's all the same.
It's all the same. Yep. It's all the same.
This is a
and he was one of the winningest coaches of all time. I mean, he wasn't just like a coach.
He didn't want, it's the same with sleep, right? The more you're like, I gotta sleep, then it doesn't happen. If you're like, you know, less attached, sleep comes easier to you. And as Neil says here, you know, it's a great book. And the more you're like, if I win, that's great. If I lose, that's acceptable. But I want to win, of course. But, you know, that's the way. All right, that was a PM sidetrack there. Let's see. Let's see if we forgot anything. I think we kind of answered this, Ingrid. If not, please come back to us with more questions. Okay, so let's go over next one. Neil says, I follow him since the Bulls. Okay, cool. Yeah, it's a super book. All right, Nina says the following. Hi, I've been following Set It and Forget It for 3 weeks now, and last week I thought my sleep was fixed because I'd fall asleep within minutes every day. But the last few days, I go to bed with my heart racing fast and it keeps me up for hours. Yesterday was the first really bad night because my heart was just beating so fast. I don't have any heart problems and I'm not on any medications. I wonder why has it switched like this from really good sleep to anxiety again? What should I do if my heart races and keeps me up? I only had insomnia for a few months, so I thought just a few weeks would stabilize me and give me my normal sleep back, but it doesn't look like I'm there yet. All right. Nina has a very good question. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, and I can't remember if I talked about this on another podcast or not. So if I already talked about this a little bit, there's just more good stuff here. But, you know, the anxiety, you know, can manifest in different ways. And, you know, the racing heart and these kinds of things is not uncommon. You know, the fact that sleep kind of gets better for a while, then doesn't, you know, then kind of gets a little more of a struggle for a while, back and forth, is really, really common. And it usually can lead to, you know, kind of the pondering and the wondering if I'm doing things right and, you know, what do I need to do differently? And these kinds of thoughts that really keep driving that insomnia, instead of developing kind of a mindset of, you know, if I have a poor night, it's just a poor night. It's not insomnia to just have a poor night. So when you can kind of move towards that way of thinking, then there's much less pressure involved with sleep. And you might find that kind of like, you know, you feel like your heart's racing, that these kinds of hypnic jerks, all these kinds of like anxiety hyperarousal sorts of kind of symptoms, if you will, they diminish because you're not monitoring things. You're not monitoring yourself for every little change if you're awake at night. You know, you kind of move towards just enjoy the time and you know, relax and just hang out and have fun and do whatever you want to do, instead of hyper-monitoring yourself, because that will lead to, I mean, if you hyper-monitor yourself, you can come up with anything like, oh, that last breath I took, that was like a little bit shallow. You know, maybe I'm not breathing deeply enough. And then now you're focused on your breathing and you're just going to tie yourself into a knot, or, you know, any other symptom. You can come up with symptoms if you really start to really, really hyper analyze yourself. And that's problematic.
Yes, certainly. And by the way, we already talked about this playlist I made called like The Model, and one of the videos. So if you're interested in that one, Nina, check any new video, including this one, and you'll see playlist. One is called The Model. And then within that model place, this one's called Clues and Cues. And where I go over like a cue is something very simple. It's like a message from your body, like you're tired, you need to rest. You're hungry, you need to eat. Very simple cue. And then you have clues, which are different. Those are signals or like experiences in your body that are a clue to what you're thinking. And the palpitations is a very common clue. It's just a clue that you are anxious, you're hyper aroused, you're kind of on edge. So that's just good to know, because if you think a clue is a cue, if you think palpitations mean something and they tell you to do something, you're kind of in the wrong direction. But if you realize this is just a clue, it's just a clue that I'm kind of nervous, then there's no mystery there. Now, this has become actually one of my favorite questions, Nina, which is when someone is like, I did so much better for 2 weeks, but now I'm not doing well again, because you can learn so much from this. So here's the thing. Nina says, I did the set it and forget it. I started sleeping better, but now I'm back again. And why is this? Because this is because there's a little bit of confusion there as for why you did better, Nina. You're starting to think that it was because you did this that you slept better, but that's never the case, because you cannot make yourself sleep. What happened was when you started set it and forget it, I'm guessing you read my book maybe, or you heard on the channel here, what you did was you became more okay with being awake at night. You were trying less. You were actually going to bed being like, not being like, I gotta sleep, but it's okay if I don't sleep, right? And then sleep came to you. You were doing less, you were trying less. But then, you know, you have this radar in your brain, and when sleep has gotten on that radar, it takes a while before it's completely gone. Then you started thinking about sleep, like, am I really doing it right? Like, maybe you had a night when you slept a little, and then sleep surfaced on the radar again. And then you thought, but I'm doing everything. I'm doing set and forget it. Why am I not sleeping? But you forget that it was doing less that led you to sleep better. So you just have to know that you've already experienced the magic of, you know, being willing to be awake at night, the magic of not resisting, the magic of going to bed and saying, if I sleep a lot or a little, both are okay. So when you go back to that, when you realize that that's why I slept better, it becomes so much easier to let go and go to bed, being open to whatever happens. And, you know, you'll sleep really well again, Nina. Absolutely. Yep. Twisted Cool Gamer says, hey. Hey, Twisted Cool Gamer.
Cool Gamer. I like that.
Cool. Well, let's hop on to our next question. Which is from Lauren. Hi, I've really been enjoying all of the videos you both have been putting on YouTube. Thank you so much for taking all the time and effort to do this. Anytime, Lauren. My question is this. I was put on clonazepam for insomnia 9 to 10 months ago. I had been really starting to struggle with sleep even when taking it due to anxiety. Now that I've been watching your videos more often, my sleep confidence has gone up and I've been sleeping better, but I'm also still on the medication. I want to come off it slowly and with the help of my doctor, of course, but my main issue is with the fear of rebound insomnia that I will likely experience. I went on it in the first place due to the fear I had associated with insomnia, and experiencing insomnia when coming off is something that terrifies me a lot. I want to be in a place where I can be more confident and unafraid of insomnia and ultimately be brave enough to start the process of coming off the clonazepam and regaining my own ability to relax my brain at night. Thank you in advance for any help that you may have, and happy new year. Very well. So Lauren here, like, to summarize, it's on clonazepam, wants to come off, but is very afraid of having rebound insomnia. I have several things that I think could help here, but what are your first thoughts, Michael?
Yeah. you know, when you're talking about medication for sleep, you're talking about confidence. It's really the main topic. Absolutely follow your doctor's advice and slowly tapering. You know, it's not you don't abruptly stop. And that's really true with just about anything. If you've been taking something, doing something, you know, like melatonin or whatever, just like, I think it's always helpful to kind of do a systematic, just you commit and you slowly taper and then you're done. And you just do it methodically, like it's on the side, like it's just something that you're doing, like without thinking, you're just slowly tapering. But these benzodiazepines are pretty strong. And so obviously, you know, you need doctor's guidance there, and that's fantastic. You're doing that. So I think that, you know, when we talk about confidence, it's like that you're seeding the confidence, right? You're giving it to the medication. You think it's making you sleep. And then the anxiety associated with the thought of not having this is that drives the anxiety. And so your confidence will be there. It will build the more, you know, you educate yourself and understand that, you know, your sleep is something you can't control in any way. You have to kind of you know, do all the things we've talked about. I mean, it's really not like a real, I don't have like a specific thing. I just think that your confidence will be there, that, you know, if you're not monitoring the time, you're not monitoring yourself, you're just methodically going about your night, but enjoying, you know, befriending the wakefulness, all of that is going to get you there. It's not like, in my mind, like a specific thing. So, you know, over time, you know, 9 months of medications that could generate a lot of, you know, I don't know, not misplaced confidence, but you know, you believe that this was producing your sleep. And it's a very kind of sedating medication, and it can make it seem like that, but it's not generating natural sleep. And so you'll get there. You just kind of have to be methodical about it and do all the things, you know, all these things that we've talked about, and your confidence will grow. And then that will be what will carry you to the future with great sleep.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think you already talked about this, Michael, but just to be crystal clear, like nothing can make you sleep except your own body. Medications can be sedating. They can remove some of that, maybe anxiety, but they never make you sleep. So all sleep you have in your whole entire life was made by your body, not by any medication. And like rebound insomnia, I think really predominantly come from how you think. Mm-hmm. You know, the classic one is somebody is taking half their medication, and then they know that, and then they wonder, how will I sleep? You know, I've only taken half of it, so will I still sleep again? What if I don't? What if I have rebound insomnia? What if I have to take it again? Maybe I shouldn't have done this taper. Maybe I should have waited longer. That, the monitoring, the thoughts, they create a ton of hyperarousal and insomnia. So I think that really is where the rebound insomnia comes from, rather than the simple reduction in medication. Mm-hmm. Now, basically what Lauren is asking here is sort of like, the question is sort of like, is there a way for me to get off this medication without having the rebound insomnia, which is basically a way of trying to have some control over sleep. And we know that insomnia comes from mm-hmm. when you try to control sleep. So there is really no way of, like, the more you try to do it, the more you try to come up with, like, I have to come up with a way of doing this so I don't get any rebound insomnia, then you're going to have a lot of rebound insomnia. But if you go to a place of like, yeah, I am going to have some insomnia probably because my thought patterns have changed and so sort of, but I'm okay with that. I'm willing to experience insomnia, and then I'm not afraid of that, then you'll have less of it. And I think the other thing I want to add here is that, you know, sort of like if somebody tells you, which it's not the case with Lauren here, but often you hear like people say, I'm going to try to come off this medication. And when people say that, I immediately go like, this is a little problematic. It's kind of like if somebody told you, I'm going to try to stop smoking, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to try to see if I can do it. But you know, of course, that when you don't smoke, you're going to feel a certain way. You're going to want it, you know, because it's made you feel a certain way. Right.
Yeah.
And so, if somebody goes like, I'm going to try to see what happens if I don't take this medication, then they are probably not quite there where they're going to do it. So mm-hmm. it cannot really be a trial. It sort of has to be more of a decision. You know, you can
exactly
with the doctor, like, this is how I'm going to do it. and then commit to it. And then no matter what happens, even if I have a lot of rebound insomnia, I'm going to go down that path, and then you'll do really well, you know?
Yeah. And kind of like with smoking, you know, people who are trying to quit smoking, it's usually like a stress that happens that makes them restart. And so, you know, the smoking is something that maybe chemically makes them feel a little better. And so they're avoiding the anxiety, the stress. And the same can be true with sleeping medication. It's like, you know, they want to avoid being awake at night. That terrifies the person. And so they get this medication and they just rely on it. And it's kind of what it's doing is it's not allowing you to change your thinking about being awake at night. It's sort of like you're gonna just avoid it all by this medication. And, you know, again, learning things about sleep, like everyone wakes up multiple times every night, you know, like just understanding that and really, you know, learning about sleep and insomnia and all of that, what will carry you through as you do your kind of like your methodical taper or whatever your doctor set up for you. You know, it's what will get you there. And it's, you know, and you don't want to just like, I'm just stop taking this medication and then not change your thinking at all. Just like doing it, you're going to be looking for other things. You're going to probably, you know, find that rabbit hole and that gets, you know.
And by the way, starting, you know, speaking of smoking, like if somebody's like, they decide to stop smoking and then like they actually stop and then like 2 weeks later, they actually smoke a cigarette, that the reaction to that is very important, because if that person goes like, they're really hard on themselves, like, dang it, why did I do that? I destroyed everything. How can I be so, you know, how could I be so dumb? Then they're probably going to smoke more because they're so hard on themselves. Right. But if they go, yeah, I smoke a cigarette, but that's okay. Yeah. Same thing. Yeah. If you kind of start tapering, but then you take a little extra clonazepam one night, and you're like, that's okay. Don't think more about it. Be kind to yourself and you'll do really great.
Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Steven says, hi guys, what are your opinion on blue light filters? You know, here's something I wanted to like, I've been pondering lately is that as a natto coach here, now a natto teacher, it's like, you almost have to approach a question, or like when somebody asks you a question, you actually learn more from the question than what the question is about in a way. Meaning like when Steven asked, hi guys, what are your opinion on blue light filters? It may seem that this is a question about blue light filters, but to me, this actually teaches me about what Steven thinks, right? And there's so much implied in this, which is, you know, the implication here is that blue light filter, like blue light is probably important, so that filters are probably important. And what it tells me is that, Steven, if you're there, you know, I hope you don't mind that I'm using your question as a kind of a general example of how you think as a coach, which is, again, this what this question teaches me is that someone is trying to have some sense of control of their sleep. That's basically what it teaches me. So I think the most important teaching here is actually that there is no control. And whenever you try to control sleep, you sleep less, okay? But then to get more specific and to actually answer the question, I want to say that, yeah, no, blue light has like zero to minimal impact on your sleep. Meaning, you know, does it have any impact whatsoever? Maybe it does, but so does, like, if you drink Pepsi or Coke, that probably matters. Like if you floss or not, that probably matters, you know, a little bit, like 1 second here or there, but does it truly matter? Of course not. And so like blue light doesn't matter. Filters don't matter. What I want to say here, what I want to summarize this if you way is like, I have like this formula where I say X isn't the problem, but thinking about it is. So if you think about blue light and blue light filters and wonder and ponder and deliberate, they can create a lot of hyperarousal, a lot of tension, preoccupation. That can be a big problem. But the blue light and the filters themselves, they don't matter.
Yeah. You know, the blue light, of course, the backlit screen idea. You got it, Steven. You know, it's like there are people that sleep great that watch TV all the way up to bedtime and even in bed a little bit, then they sleep fine. So if blue light was such a detrimental thing to sleep, how is that possible? And then you have people that wear blue light filters all evening long, you know, and don't even go near their TV, and they struggle with their sleep.
They're going to struggle a lot. Yeah.
You know, that's not the effect, you know, the blue light thing. I mean, from the studies that I've read, it's like, they have to have it so concentrated and like so close to your eye and really like high intensity kind of things. Well, okay. Yeah. But that's not life. You know, that's not real life. And so, you know, there's more to the story. All right. So there's more to the story.
Yeah. 100%. Okay, I think that was it, because I'm going to do a separate episode. Matthew had a long message that I want to go over in detail, maybe later today or during the weekend or potentially Monday. But anyway, Matthew, I'm going to answer you in detail. And other than that, I think that was it.
I think so.
Oh, wait, maybe one more live question here. Let's see. Multi says, waking up early, feeling like I slept good, but it's too early, almost at 5 hours. Should we go back to sleep or start the day? Good one. What do you think, Michael?
Should you go back to sleep? That sort of implies like you can just make yourself fall back to sleep. And that's kind of a slippery slope there, because it's like nothing makes you sleep. You can't just initiate it willfully. So, you know, I think with like the morning thing, and you know, I hear that a lot. It's like, wake up early, feel like you slept okay, but it's like early. Well, maybe early isn't necessarily early when it comes to your sleep schedule. If the other option is lying there for a couple hours, like struggling with sleep, I think I had an email about this. I forget who sent it not too long ago, but like that last couple hours of the night, the last couple hours of quote unquote sleep, if that's like a struggle, you know, then you might start your day instead of lying there struggling for 2 hours, just like fretting and worried and anxious that you're not sleeping enough. But if you like it, you know, if it's like an hour or two of just very relaxing time, very peaceful, enjoyable, you're sort of drifting in and out of like that dream state, hey, great, enjoy it. Like there's no problem at all. So it's really, the question is to yourself, you know, it's like, should you go back to sleep or not, or start the day? Kind of depends
how you. Yeah, exactly. There are no rules, right? Mm-hmm. It's important to know that there are no rules, and whatever you feel is good is the path of least pressure, right, is the best one. But I would add, and I'm surprised you didn't do this, Michael. I'm just kidding. Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't do the timeless thing. But my question becomes like, how do you know you slept 5 hours? You know, how do you know that?
Yeah.
And then you probably go, well, I know I fell asleep around 11 and I was up at 4 or something like that. And then I would say like, but you know, try to make a point of not knowing how much you slept. That's always good, because you know, knowing how much you slept is kind of like trying to control things, and not having any control is so powerful. So that's good. Mm-hmm. And Multi thinks says,
yeah, you got
the answer. Cool. Perfect. Well, let's call it a day. And Michael, have a nice weekend, everyone. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. Great questions. See you later.